From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, welcome back to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the science behind weather and climate in Illinois. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
And joining you from balmy Houston, Texas this week, I'm Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. This week is the annual meeting of the American Meteorological Society.
And to talk more about some of this winter weather we've been experiencing, we are joined by Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. Trent, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Maddie. I should also be joining from balmy Houston, but flight got canceled, so I'm here in less balmy Champaign.
Yeah, you're sticking it out with us.
That's right.
So, Steve, you mentioned that you are at the annual meeting for the Meteorological Society. Has there been kind of anything, any kind of new interesting science that you've learned at this meeting?
Well, I would say this meeting is always an incredible array of all that's going on in the atmospheric and related sciences. And I would say this year, the added sort of feeling and the vibes, I would say, is the reaction to the federal disruptions that have impacted everybody in our field, everything from federal workers and reductions, restructuring of federal agencies and reductions of funding, and also the fight for the National Center for Atmospheric Research, which is one of the central global climate and weather-related research centers that's facing breakup from the Trump administration. So we've been talking a lot about how we in the weather and climate community can respond to some of these challenges and make sure that the public is aware, and of course, elected officials are aware of all the important things that we do to help our economy and also to save lives.
So Steve, let's go to you. With all the cold weather we've been experiencing in central Illinois this winter, how is it still true that the climate overall is warming?
Yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit later about how extraordinary this winter has been so far. Of course, I'm here in Houston, but even down here in the South, we're talking about potentially freezing weather in Miami and with the next storm. So this is pretty incredible. But this is entirely consistent with the idea that in an overall warming climate, that certainly means that, of course, on average, our temperatures might be increasing. But that says nothing about what's happening either on a local scale. So, for example, there could be regions that actually have the opposite trend. And just as an example, you know, just because everything's going up on average doesn't mean that one or two things can't be going down. So that's certainly an effect, and that has physical reasons for that on a regional and local basis. But then also, there's also the sort of effect of variability and how that might change in a global warming scenario. So even though on average our winters might be getting warmer, let's say in central Illinois, it doesn't mean that we might not experience storm systems that might produce cold air outbreaks within our region that might be even more extreme than we've seen in the past. And it might lead to changes in patterns that might lead to those things becoming more frequent in the wintertime versus other times of the year. And everybody's probably heard by now this term polar vortex that gets used and somehow misused in the media. There's been a lot of research that's looked at whether changes in the polar vortex will potentially amplify or not, leading to more extreme cold air outbreaks in the United States in the winter. I think the jury is still out on this. This is a very active area of research, but it's never been the case that because climate scientists have said things are going to warm on average, that means we're out of the woods in the wintertime in terms of having extreme impacts like we're seeing right now.
So just to clarify, so the kind of among climate science, the verdict is still out on whether we'll be getting kind of strong activity from the polar vortex as a trend of climate change?
Yeah, I would say there's actually quite a bit of back and forth in the literature about this. And it's a tricky problem because we're dealing with a phenomenon that originates in the stratosphere. And the polar vortex sits up within the polar stratosphere. Traditionally, our weather and climate models don't have a lot of resolution in those layers. And so there's a lot of variability amongst the models. Even the current weather models between Europe and the United States. Actually, we've seen here at the AMS meeting that they disagree a lot about what happens in the stratosphere. And we're actually, our community is doing a field campaign. NASA is planning a field campaign in the coming years to actually fly high altitude aircraft into that region to collect information about the structure of the polar vortex and improving the representation of those things in our weather models. So this is an active area of research. And we've obviously identified that polar vortex disruptions, which are what cause the intrusion of cold air into mid-latitudes oftentimes, are very important, but it turns out that we need to do a better job at predicting them and understanding them on weather and climate timescales.
And about what altitudes are the stratosphere? Like, what altitudes would these planes be flying at?
Yeah, so it varies a lot. And during the summertime, the stratosphere is way up, let's say around 11 to 15 kilometers even. But in the wintertime, it's a lot lower. And it can be down even around 5 or 6 kilometers, which is about, I would say, three or so miles above the surface. So as that wintertime air, the polar vortex, actually the stratosphere is much lower than it is during the rest of the time of year. And that temperature contrast actually is what drives the polar jet stream.
So Trent, kind of, you know, taking more of a broader view, how is climate change going to change winter in central Illinois going forward generally?
Yeah, you know, Steve's discussion of the polar vortex and our current weather situation in the context of climate change really sets this up well. So the most significant climate change signal in Illinois, not just in winter, for all seasons, is an increase in winter temperatures going on over the last 130 years. Winter is warmed at a much faster rate than all the other seasons combined. And just to give you an idea of winter here, meteorological winter from December through February, that's how we're defining winter here. And so warmer winters are the trend. And when we look at temperatures within the wintertime, just day-to-day temperatures, it's actually the very coldest days that are warming the fastest rate. But this is where we can separate, and we need to separate, weather from climate, especially when we think about what we care about. So what we care about is suitability for plants, maybe a type of cultivar of crop, then the overall winter average temperature does matter. If we care about people vulnerable, people being impacted by extreme cold, well, this year is proven, 2019 is proven, and Steve just talked about how we can get extreme cold that can be impactful for humans and plants and animals and infrastructure, even in a warmer winter climate. And so when we think about winter weather impacts, it's an important to have the nuanced conversation of here's how climate change is changing the climate in winter, but here's really important implications for weather. Another one is that we really haven't seen, you know, we would expect that a warming winter trend would also yield less snowfall, right? So like warmer air, less snowfall. When we look at the long-term records of snowfall, not just in central Illinois, but in northern Illinois as well, we don't see a consistent long-term trend. Part of that is that year-to-year variability of snowfall is just through the roof, more than probably any other variable. But also, even though we've had recent years where we haven't gotten a lot of snow, we've also had some recent years this year, 2019, where we've gotten quite a bit of snow. And in fact, having that warming trend means that during the heart of winter, kind of this time, late January, early February, now we have more days where our high temperatures and our average temperatures aren't in the teens and 20s. They're in the high 20s and low 30s, which is ideal for snow production. So we can get snow. There's no such thing as too cold to snow. Generally speaking, though, we don't yield as much snow when we get those temperatures in single digits or below zero. The right ideal conditions for having enough moisture in the air and to produce snow is right there in the upper 20s, maybe even low 30s. And so having more frequent temperatures around that range in the heart of winter can actually produce more snow, which sort of runs counterintuitive to what we think about long-term trends, but at the same time is that really important interplay between climate and weather. So when it comes to like winter weather and climate change, it really does depend on what we care about. If we care about these really extreme temperatures, just one-off weather kind of events, then the overall prognosis will be different than if we care about something like, for example, perennial agriculture that'll respond to the season as a whole.
Yeah, I feel like a very important theme of this discussion is that it's not simple. It's very nuanced. It's not just getting warmer. There's lots of detail here.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that this is a great example that we're experiencing right now, but here in winter, but basically every aspect of climate change is that way. Is there's no such thing as, you know, climate change affects really complex systems, ecological systems, human systems, and so those interactions are just, you know, going to be complex themselves.
Could you expand a little bit more on what you alluded to, kind of warmer average temperatures in the winter and the impact on perennial growing?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting area of research that the Midwest has kind of been left out of, other than Michigan. When we think about agriculture in the Midwest, especially Illinois, it's corn and beans, and those don't really interact too much with winter weather. Then there's winter wheat, but it's dormant during the winter. But, you know, we do have a very, very important and productive perennial crop production. That could be tree fruit, apples, plums, peaches, cherries, as well as a perennial production in kind of semi-protected sort of areas like high hoop houses and things like that. And especially when it comes to the tree fruit, the vineyards, the berry patches, those plants are responding to winter weather. And this warming trend that we're seeing has sort of elicited a concern among growers of changes in how those trees or those bushes, those vineyards are going to respond and when they break dormancy. The kind of overall simplistic view is warmer winter means that the trees will break dormancy earlier and therefore put themselves at a higher risk of spring freeze problems. Because again, distinguishing between climate and weather, the overall average winter temperature is a climate phenomenon. When the last spring freeze occurs is more of a weather phenomenon. Lots of variability year to year. So that's something that we've actually been looking at, is how this winter trend, temperature trend, has changed what we call winter chilling and the dormancy break kind of timing of apple, peach trees, and then other types of plants as well. What we see is that we can have an earlier dormancy break overall and an earlier kind of spring phenology on apples and peaches because of this warming trend, particularly in central northern Illinois and then north of there. Not so much of a signal in southern Illinois. But interestingly enough, the spring freezes are becoming earlier into the spring at a faster rate. So it's basically this race between when the tree wakes up and when we're getting spring freezes. But overall, we do see that change, and our model suggests there isn't necessarily an increased risk of spring freeze damage in the future because of that winter warming. That being said, in parts of the upper Midwest, we also see an increase in suitability for types of perennial crops that we may not have been able to grow up there before. So it would not surprise me if 20, 30 years down the road, we look to commercially viable peach orchards in southern Wisconsin, for example. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Steve, when will the extreme cold we are experiencing in central Illinois finally pass?
So I don't have a lot of good news here. Right now we have a very large amplitude, what we call long wave trough. This is a big dip in the jet stream that's covering most of the eastern United States. And the problem is that big troughs don't move very fast. And so a lot of times we might get what we call a short wave that might bring a blast of cold air that lasts a couple of days. But this thing is pretty big. And so looking out at the long range forecast, the next time that I see a temperature above freezing is on Friday, February 6th during the day. Now, the good news is that the models right now, even though this is out quite a ways, do have moderating temperatures that hover in the 30s for the period after that. Of course, that's subject to change, but at least there's some evidence that we won't be dealing with single digit temperatures during the day past that time frame. So stay cold, but find those blankets. We're going to be in this for a while.
So prepare to hunker down.
Yep.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about weather and climate. We're talking about winter weather with Steve Nesbitt, head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, and Trent Ford, state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute. So, Trent, when was the last time that we had this much snow in Champaign-Urbana?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. We had an early start to the snowfall season in December, and then we went quiet for a while, and then it's been back to active. So to date, we've had 24.7 inches, so almost 25 inches of measured snowfall. We measure it for Champaign-Urbana just right there at the water survey. Last time we had that much through late January was 2014. But really, we have to go. I mean, this is an amount that we only see one every maybe 10 to 15 years. So it's a lot. And actually, it's really interesting. We, you know, through here on on January 28th, that 25 inches of snow we have is more than each of the last 4 years combined. So not individually, but combined. So we have had this lull in snowfall. So if it feels like we've had a ton of snow, A, we have climatologically, and B, we certainly have given what's happened the last few years here in Champaign.
A lot of folks have been needing reminders on how to drive in the snow because we've been seeing pretty rough roads locally this week. Could you maybe give us some reminders on how to stay safe while there's still a good amount of snow on the road?
Yeah. So if anybody's been in Illinois for more than a year, you have probably tried to walk on ice or snow. And when you do, if you walk on ice or snow in a way that you would just walk on dry sidewalk or grass, you're going to fall down. And everybody being human knows what to do. They don't take as long of a stride. Certainly if they're running, you kind of have to take a shorter stride. You have to walk more slowly. You can't expect to pivot like your Marshall Faulk spinning out of a tackle. By the way, he's a football player for those who don't follow football. You know, those are the kind of things that you're just taking it slow because you know that it'll be easy to slip if you try to accelerate or decelerate or turn too quickly. And that's just your legs. When you're in a car, it's the same way. Your car essentially has four points of contact with the ground, your four wheels. When you try to accelerate too quickly or decelerate too quickly, as in brake, or turn too sharply on ice or snow, you're not going to get the same friction, and therefore you're not going to get the same grip. And your chances are you're going to oversteer, which means that you're going to want to turn right or left, but you're just going to go straight, maybe into the car waiting to turn left next to you. Or you're going to decelerate, expect to brake at a stop sign, and just like the person I saw when I was driving here, slide right on through it, hoping that everybody else around you was smart enough to stop in a shorter amount of period of time. So when you're driving in snow, take time. That is, don't try to just mash on the accelerator to speed up. You're just going to spin your wheels. Don't mash on the brake expecting you're going to be able to stop in the same stopping distance that you would if the snow wasn't there. And I will say that if you have all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, that does help with acceleration because you're getting all four wheels to grip. It does not help with deceleration. A front-wheel drive car is going to stop at about the same distance as a rear-wheel drive car as a four-wheel drive car. So when I was driving to Bloomington Normal over the weekend and then driving back because my flight got canceled, all of the cars in the ditch and all the cars smashed up against the median were pickup trucks, presumably with four-wheel drive. So just because you have all four wheels spinning, don't be confident that you're necessarily going to be able to get grip. But the main point is just go slow, accelerate, brake slowly, give yourself lots of distance, and just be careful.
I looked up some of these stopping distances. This is just a test that Progressive did on just typical tires, not necessarily winter tires, but moving at 30 miles per hour on just typical dry roads, the stopping distance is 30 feet. On snow, that's 100 feet. And on ice, that's as much as 200 feet. If you're, you know, more highway driving, going 60 miles an hour, your stopping distance on dry roads is 120 feet. On snow, it's 400 feet, and ice, closer to 800 feet. So really just going slow and allowing lots of stopping distance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always tell my kids it's like you have to think about like driving with a layer cake in the back seat. You don't want to tip that thing over. So you want to try to keep going straight as much as possible. Don't accelerate too fast. Don't decelerate too fast. And yeah, if you have something like a pickup truck, you have to think about the weight distribution as well. And a lot of people up north will put sandbags in the back of their trucks to get more traction so they don't spin out. So think about your vehicle and make sure it's got good tires and got plenty of gas in case you get stuck somewhere.
So Trent, kind of looking beyond February 6, when this cold front will start to die down a little bit, what does the weather outlook look like for the rest of the winter?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the rest of winter is actually just about one more month. It's February, right? And for February, the outlooks, the monthly outlooks have gone into back to La Nina mode. We're in a La Nina right now. It's abnormally cool temperatures in the tropical Pacific, and because of stronger trade winds, and that pattern for the central Midwest tends to be variable temperatures. So lots of switches between warm and cold, and wetter than normal conditions. What's interesting is when we look at the next 2 weeks to 3 weeks, there's actually a transition from colder than normal to warmer than normal, but below average precipitation. So it'd be interesting to see what'll actually happen. I'm actually the temperature thing is interesting, but I'm actually more interested in precipitation because we are still dealing with really significant drought here in Champaign. And every month that we get closer to spring makes me more and more concerned about what comes if we continue the drought conditions. So hopefully that above average precipitation signal in the outlooks does verify, but that's kind of what we're looking at for at least the month of February.
Yeah, that's good news that hopefully we'll get some more precipitation. We're also coming up on Groundhog Day.
It's Punxsutawney Phil! There's a shadow up here. Get ready for 6 more weeks.
So, Steve, is there any truth to these predictions by Punxsutawney Phil?
This is one of the most fun questions that we get all the time. Obviously, there are some things that obviously animals know or have evolved to know about the weather. And those are kind of usually on short-term things. But on longer climate time scales, there's really not any way physically that a animal like that could make any predictions on a meaningful way out to long term. Now, of course, you could make the argument that if it's, for example, sunny in early February, that means you're in a very cold atmosphere. And typically, when it warms up, you get more cloudy conditions, so you might see your shadow. But when you look at the statistics, it's really not a significant predictor. Kind of like the old Farmer's Almanac that they publish, well in advance, and we read that and we see specific weather information. These are things that really don't have much skill in, on the long-term predictions timescale.
So even if he says 6 more weeks of winter, we can still hold on hope that he's not entirely accurate and that the temperatures will continue to be low.
Right. And if you think about 6 weeks versus right around the corner, I mean, what does that really mean anyway?
Well, thank you, Steve and Trent, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Stay warm.
Trent Ford is the state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute, and Steve Nesbitt is the head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate. If you have a weather or climate question you want us to tackle, leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Weather Realness is produced by
Jeff Frame,
Trent Ford,
Steve Nesbitt,
Reginald Hardwick,
and myself, Maddie Stover. Funding for this podcast is partially provided by the Backlund Charitable Trust. Weather Realness is produced by the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with you again next week.